Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hello, this is Let's Talk About Myths, Baby. And I am your host, Liv, who does not sound normal. I am here with a very quick introduction today because, as you can hear, this is a podcast. I am not particularly well. You know, I've managed to avoid getting like any form of audible illness for the last like 3+ straight years. Not anymore. Anyway, thankfully I thought ahead last week and I recorded the actual reading episode that this is before I sounded like this. So if you're worried, you don't need to be. The lengthy episode that is coming for you does not sound like, I don't even know what I sound like, does not sound like this. So not to worry. I am just here to introduce it. Today's reading episode is, it's for spooky season, obviously, because how can I not? The world, it needs to be spooky. And so I thought about the different ways the ancient sources look at the underworld. And I hope that that is going to be Tuesday's episode as well, is a much more in-depth, my version look at all the different ways the underworld is described in all the sources that describe it, because it is, like all of Greek mythology and beyond, not a finite anything. Everyone says something different. It's all equally fascinating, and I want to talk about it. But today we are talking about the two most famous and most detailed references to the underworld in ancient epic. I am going to be reading the underworld section of Homer's Odyssey, obviously, because how could I not? Odysseus goes down to the underworld. I'm pretty sure talks to Persephone. He definitely talks to or sees all of these women that we love from mythology. It's fascinating. Agamemnon is super pissed at his wife. That part's funny. It's great. So I'm reading that section of Homer's Odyssey, the whole underworld section, and then we're transitioning into the first ever reading of Virgil's Aeneid. That's right, I am reading from Virgil's Aeneid today. We are looking at how the very famous Roman looked at the underworld, and just kind of, I mean, it is vastly different from the Odyssey, even as much as it is meant to explicitly mirror the Odyssey in the fact that he's there, everything that's leading up to it. It is meant to be very reminiscent of the Odyssey, but the actual description of the underworld and what happens there is both similar and not. Like, he sees a lot of the same people, a lot of the same Tartarian punishments, and yet it is incredibly different. Anyway, it is another fascinating look at the underworld, and I wanted to read it to you. And, well, I mean, there's lots of, you know, blood and gore, because how could there not be when you are in the world of the dead? As always, you can find descriptions of the translations, all of the details in the episode's description. As well, you can find a link if you are curious about the Roman equivalent of some of the Greek god names. As I've mentioned in recent episodes, like, it is not just cut and dry Roman to Greek gods, but there are a lot of equivalents that are super interesting, and so you can find a link to that. This is a selection from Homer's Odyssey, Book 11. Then, when we had got down to the seashore, we drew our ship into the water, and got her mast and sails into her. We also put the sheep on board and took our places, weeping and in great distress of mind. Circe, that great and cunning goddess, sent us a fair wind that blew dead aft and stayed steadily with us, keeping our sails all the time well filled. So we did whatever wanted doing to the ship's gear, and let her go as the wind and helmsman headed her. All day long her sails were full as she held her course over the sea, but when the sun went down and darkness was over all the earth, we got into the deep waters of the river Oceanus, where lie the land and the city of the Cimmerians, who live enshrouded in mist and darkness, which the rays of the sun never pierce, neither at his rising nor as he goes down again out of the heavens. But the poor wretches live in one long melancholy night. When we got there, we beached the ship, took the sheep out of her, and went along by the waters of Oceanus till we came to the place of which Circe had told us. Here Perimedes and Eurylochus held the victims, while I drew my sword and dug the trench a cubit each way. I made a drink offering to all the dead, first with honey and milk, then with wine, and thirdly with water. And I sprinkled white barley meal over the whole, praying earnestly to the poor feckless ghosts and promising them that when I got back to Ithaca, I would sacrifice a barren heifer for them, the best I had, and would load the pyre with good things. I also particularly promised that Tiresias should have a black sheep to himself, the best in all my flocks. When I had prayed sufficiently to the dead, I cut the throats of the two sheep and let the blood run into the trench, whereon the ghosts came trooping up from Erebus. Brides, young bachelors, old men worn out with toil, maids who had been crossed in love, and brave men who had been killed in battle, with their armor still smirched with blood. They came from every quarter and flitted round the trench with a strange kind of screaming sound that made me turn pale with fear. When I saw them coming, I told the men to be quick and flay the carcasses of the two dead sheep and make burnt offerings of them, and at the same time to repeat prayers to Hades and to Persephone. But I sat where I was with my sword drawn and would not let the poor feckless ghosts come near the blood till Tiresias should have answered my questions. The first ghost that came was that of my comrade Elpenor, for he had not yet been laid beneath the earth. We had left his body unwaked and unburied in Circe's house, for we had too much else to do. I was very sorry for him and cried when I saw him. "Elpenor," said I, "how did you come down here into this gloom and darkness? You have got here on foot quicker than I have with my ship." "Sir," he answered with a groan, "it was all bad luck and my own unspeakable drunkenness. I was lying asleep on the top of Circe's house and never thought of coming down again by the great staircase, but fell right off the roof and broke my neck. So my soul came down to the house of Hades. And now I beseech you, by all those whom you have left behind, although they are not here, by your wife, by the father who brought you up when you were a child, and by Telemachus, who is the one hope of your house, do what I shall now ask you. I know that when you leave this limbo, you will again hold your ship for the Iaean island. Do not go thence, leaving me unwaked and unburied behind you, or I may bring heaven's anger upon you. But burn me with whatever armor I have, build a barrow for me on the seashore that may tell people in days to come what a poor unlucky fellow I was, and plant over my grave the oar I used to row with when I was yet alive and with my messmates." And I said, "My poor fellow, I will do all that you have asked of me." Thus then did we sit and hold sad talk with one another, I on the one side of the trench with my sword held over the blood, and the ghost of my comrade saying all this to me from the other side. Then came the ghost of my dead mother, Anticlea, daughter to Autilicus. I had left her alive when I set out for Troy and was moved to tears when I saw her. But even so, for all my sorrow, I would not let her come near the blood till I had asked my questions of Tiresias. Then came also the ghost of Theban Tiresias, with his golden scepter in his hand. He knew me and said, "Odysseus, noble son of Laertes, why, poor man, have you left the light of day and come down to visit the dead in this sad place? Stand back from the trench and withdraw your sword that I may drink of the blood and answer your questions truly." So I drew back and sheathed my sword, whereon, when he had drank of the blood, he began with his prophecy. "You want to know," said he, "about your return home, but heaven will make this hard for you. I do not think you will escape the eye of Poseidon, who still nurses his bitter grudge against you for having blinded his son. Still, after much suffering, you may get home if you can restrain yourself and your companions when your ship reaches the Thrinakian island, where you will find the sheep and the cattle belonging to the sun, who sees and gives ear to everything. If you leave those flocks unharmed and think of nothing but of getting home, you may yet, after much hardship, reach Ithaca. But if you harm them, then I forewarn you of the destruction, both of your ship and of your men. Even though you may yourself escape, you will return in bad plight after losing all your men, and in another man's ship, and you will find trouble in your house, which will be overrun by high-handed people who are devouring your substance under the pretext of paying court and making presents to your wife. When you get home, you will take your revenge on these suitors, and after you have killed them by force or fraud in your own house, you may take a well-made oar and carry it on and on, till you come to a country where the people have never heard of the sea and do not even mix salt with their food, nor do they know anything about ships and oars that are the wings of a ship. I will give you this certain token which cannot escape your notice. A wayfarer will meet you and will say it must be a winnowing shovel that you should have gotten upon your shoulder. On this you must fix the oar in the ground and sacrifice a ram, a bull, and a boar to Poseidon. Then go home and offer hecatombs to all the gods in heaven, and one after the other. As for yourself, death shall come to you from the sea, and your life shall ebb away very gently when you are full of years and peace of mind, and your people shall bless you. All that I have said will come true. This, I answered, must be as it may please heaven. But tell me, and tell me true. I see my poor mother's ghost close by us. She is sitting by the blood without saying a word, and though I am her own son, she does not remember me and speak to me. Tell me, sir, how I can make her know me. That, said he, I can soon do. Any ghost that you let taste of the blood will talk with you like a reasonable being. But if you do not let them have any blood, they will go away again. On this, the ghost of Tiresias went back to the house of Hades, for his prophesying had now been spoken. But I sat still where I was until my mother came up and tasted the blood. Then she knew me at once and spoke fondly to me, saying, My son, how did you come down to this abode of darkness while you are still alive? It is a hard thing for the living to see these places, for between us and them there are great and terrible waters, and there is Oceanus, which no man can cross on foot, but he must have a good ship to take him. Are you all this time trying to find your way home from Troy, and have you never yet got back to Ithaca, nor seen your wife in your own house? Mother, said I was forced to come here to consult the ghost of the Theban prophet Tiresias. I have never yet been near the Achaean land, nor set foot on my native country, and I have had nothing but one long series of misfortunes from the very first day that I set out with Agamemnon for Ilius, the land of noble steeds, to fight the Trojans. But tell me, and tell me true, in what way did you die? Did you have a long illness, or did heaven vouchsafe you a gentle, easy passage to eternity? Tell me also about my father and the son whom I left behind me. Is my property still in their hands, or has someone else got hold of it, who thinks that I shall not return to claim it? Tell me again what my wife intends doing, and in what mind she is. Does she live with my son and guard my estate securely, or has she made the best match she could and married again? My mother answered, Your wife still remains in your house, but she is in great distress of mind and spends her whole time in tears, both night and day. No one as yet has got possession of your fine property, and Telemachus still holds your lands undisturbed. He has to entertain largely, as of course he must, considering his position as a magistrate, and how everyone invites him. Your father remains at his old place in the country and never goes near the town. He has no comfortable bed nor bedding. In the winter he sleeps on the floor in front of the fire with the men and goes about all in rags. But in summer, when the warm weather comes on again, he lies out in the vineyard on a bed of vine leaves, thrown anyhow upon the ground. He grieves continually about your never having come home and suffers more and more as he grows older. As for my own end, it was in this way. Heaven did not take me swiftly and painlessly in my own house, nor was I attacked by any illness, such as those that generally wear people out and kill them. But my longing to know what you were doing and the force of my affection for you, this is what was the death of me. Then I tried to find some way of embracing my poor mother's ghost. Thrice I sprang towards her and tried to clasp her in my arms, but each time she flitted from my embrace, as it were a dream or a phantom. And being touched to the quick, I said to her, Mother, why do you not stay still when I would embrace you? If we could throw our arms around one another, we might find sad comfort in the sharing of our sorrows, even in the house of Hades. Does Persephone want to lay a still further load of grief upon me by mocking me with a phantom only? My son, she answered, Most ill-fated of all mankind, it is not Persephone that is beguiling you, but all people are like this when they are dead. The sinews no longer hold the flesh and bones together. These perish in the fierceness of consuming fire, as soon as life have left the body, and the soul flits away as though it were a dream. Now, however, go back to the light of day as soon as you can, and note all these things, that you may tell them to your wife hereafter. Thus did we converse, and then Persephone sent up the ghosts of the wives and daughters of the most famous men. They gathered in crowds about the blood, and I considered how I might question them severally. In the end, I deemed that it would be best to draw the keen black blade that hung by my sturdy thigh, and keep them all from drinking the blood at once. So they came up one after the other, and each one, as I questioned her, told me her race and lineage. The first I saw was Tyro. She was daughter of Salmoneus and wife of Cretheus, the son of Aeolus. She fell in love with the river Enipeus, who is much the most beautiful river in the whole world. Once, when she was taking a walk by his side as usual, Poseidon, disguised as her lover, lay with her at the mouth of the river, and a huge blue wave arched itself like a mountain over them to hide both woman and god, whereon he loosed her virgin girdle and laid her in a deep slumber. When the god had accomplished the deed of love, he took her hand in his own and said, Tyro, rejoice in all goodwill. The embraces of the gods are not fruitless, and you will have fine twins about this time 12 months. Take great care of them. I am Poseidon, so now go home, but hold your tongue and do not tell anyone. Then he dived under the sea, and she, in due course, bore Peleus and Neleus, who both of them served Jove with all their might. Peleus was a great breeder of sheep and lived in Iolcus, but the other lived in Pylos. The rest of her children were by Cretheus, namely Aeson, Pheres, and Amythaon, who was a mighty warrior and a charioteer. Next to her I saw Antiope, daughter of Asopus, who could boast of having slept in the arms of even Jove himself, and who bore him 2 sons, Amphion and Zethus. These founded Thebes with its 7 gates and built a wall all around it, for strong though they were, they could not hold Thebes till they had walled it. Then I saw Alcmene, the wife of Amphitryon, who also bore to Zeus indomitable Heracles, and Megara, who was daughter to great King Creon and married the redoubtable son of Amphitryon. I also saw fair Epicaste, Jocasta, mother of King Oedipus, whose awful lot it was to marry her own son without suspecting it. He married her after killing his father, but the gods proclaimed the whole story to the world, whereon he remained king of Thebes in great grief for the spite of the gods that had borne him. But Epicaste went to the house of the mighty jailer Hades, having hanged herself for grief, and the avenging spirits haunted him as for an outraged mother, to his ruing bitterly thereafter. Then I saw Chloris, whom Neleus married for her beauty, having given priceless presents for her. She was the youngest daughter to Amphion, son of Iasus, and king of Minyan Orchomenos, and was queen in Pylos. She bore Nestor, Chromius, and Periclymenus, and she also bore that marvelously lovely woman Pyrrho, who was wooed by all the country round. But Neleus would only give her to him who should raid the cattle of Iphicles from the grazing grounds of Phylace. And this was a hard task. The only man who would undertake to raid them was a certain excellent seer. But the will of heaven was against him, for the rangers of the cattle caught him and put him in prison. Nevertheless, when a full year had passed and the same season came round again, Iphicles set him at liberty after he had expounded all the oracles of heaven. Thus, then, was the will of Zeus accomplished. And I saw Leda, the wife of Tyndareus, who bore him 2 famous sons, Castor, breaker of horses, and Polydeuces, the mighty boxer. Both these heroes are lying under the earth, though they are still alive, for by a special dispensation of Zeus, they die and come to life again, each one of them every other day throughout all time, and they have the high rank of gods. After I saw Iphimedia, wife of Aeolus, who boasted the embrace of Poseidon. She bore two sons, Otus and Ephialtes, but both were short-lived. They were the finest children that were ever born in this world, and the best-looking. Orion only excepted, for at 9 years old they were 9 fathoms high and measured 9 cubits round the chest. They threatened to make war with the gods in Olympus and tried to set Mount Ossa on the top of Mount Olympus and Mount Pelion on the top of Ossa, that they might scale heaven itself. And they would have done it, too, if they had been grown up. But Apollo, son of Leto, killed both of them before they had got so much as a sign of hair upon their cheeks or chin. Then I saw Phaedra and Procris and fair Ariadne, daughter of the magician Minos, whom Theseus was carrying off from Crete to Athens, but he did not enjoy her, for before he could do so, Artemis killed her in the island of Dia on account of what Dionysus had said against her. I also saw Myrrha and Clymene and hateful Eriphyle, who sold her own husband for gold.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
When Persephone had dismissed the female ghost in all directions, the ghost of Agamemnon, son of Atreus, came sadly up to me, surrounded by those who had perished with him in the house of Aegisthus. As soon as he had tasted the blood, he knew me, and weeping bitterly, stretched out his arms toward me to embrace me. But he had no strength nor substance any more, and I too wept and pitied him as I beheld him. "How did you come by your death?" said I. "King Agamemnon, did Poseidon raise his winds and waves against you when you were at sea? Or did your enemies make an end of you on the mainland when you were cattle-lifting or sheep-stealing, or while they were fighting in defense of their wives and city?" Odysseus, he answered, noble son of Laertes, I was not lost at sea in any storm of Poseidon's raising, nor did my foes dispatch me upon the mainland, but Aegisthus and my wicked wife were the death of me between them. He asked me to his house, feasted me, and then butchered me most miserably, as though I were a fat beast in a slaughterhouse, while all around me my comrades were slain like sheep or pigs for the wedding breakfast or picnic or gorgeous banquet of some great nobleman. You must have seen numbers of men killed either in a general engagement or in single combat, but you never saw anything so truly pitiable as the way in which we fell in that cloister, with the mixing bowl and the loaded tables lying all about and the ground reeking with our blood. I heard Priam's daughter Cassandra scream as Clytemnestra killed her close beside me. I lay dying upon the earth and the sword in my body and raised my hands to kill the slut of a murderess, but she slipped away from me. She would not even close my lips nor my eyes when I was dying, for there is nothing in this world so cruel and so shameless as a woman when she has fallen into such guilt as hers was. Fancy murdering her own husband! I thought I was going to be welcomed home by my children and my servants, but her abominable crime has brought disgrace on herself and all women who shall come after her, even on the good ones. And I said, in truth, Zeus has hated the house of Atreus, from first to last in the matter of their women's counsels. See how many of us fell for Helen's sake, and now it seems that Clytemnestra hatched mischief against you too during your absence. Be sure, therefore, continued Agamemnon, and not be too friendly even with your own wife. Do not tell her all that you know perfectly well yourself. Tell her a part only, and keep your own counsel about the rest. Not that your wife, Odysseus, is likely to murder you, for Penelope is a very admirable woman and has an excellent nature. We left her a young bride with an infant at her breast when we set out for Troy. This child is no doubt now grown up happily to a man's estate, and he and his father will have a joyful meeting and embrace one another as it is right they should do, whereas my wicked wife did not even allow me the happiness of looking upon my son, but killed me ere I could do so. Furthermore, I say, and lay my saying to your heart, do not tell people when you are bringing your ship to Ithaca, but steal a march upon them, for after all this, there is no trusting women. But tell me, and tell me true, can you give me any news of my son Orestes? Is he in Orchomenos, or at Pylos, or is he at Sparta with Menelaus? For I presume that he is still living. And I said, Agamemnon, why do you ask me? I do not know whether your son is alive or dead, and it is not right to talk when one does not know. As we two sat weeping and talking thus sadly with one another, the ghost of Achilles came up to us with Patroclus, Antilochus, and Ajax, who was the finest and goodliest man of all the Danaans, after the son of Peleus. The fleet descendant of Aeacus knew me and spoke piteously, saying, Odysseus, noble son of Laertes, what deed of daring will you undertake next, that you venture down to the house of Hades among us silly dead, who are but the ghosts of them that can labor no more? And I said, Achilles, son of Peleus, foremost champion of the Achaeans, I came to consult Tiresias and see if he could advise me about my return home to Ithaca, for I have never yet been able to get near the Achaean land, nor to set foot in my own country, but have been in trouble all this time. As for you, Achilles, no one was ever yet so fortunate as you have been, nor ever will be, for you are adored by all us Argives as long as you were alive, and now that you are here, you are a great prince among the dead. Do not, therefore, take it so much to heart, even if you are dead. Say not a word, he answered. In death's favor, I would rather be a paid servant in a poor man's house and be above ground than king of kings among the dead. But give me news about my son. Is he gone to the wars and will be a great soldier, or is this not so? Tell me also if you have heard anything about my father Peleus. Does he still rule among the Myrmidons, or do they show him no respect through Hellas and Phthia now that he is old and his limbs fail him? Could I but stand by his side in the light of day with the same strength that I had when I killed the bravest of our foes upon the plain of Troy, Could I be as I then was, and go even for a short time to my father's house? Anyone who tried to do him violence or supersede him would soon rue it. I have heard nothing, I answered, of Peleus, but I can tell you all about your son Neoptolemus, for I took him in my own ship from Scyros with the Achaeans. In our councils of war before Troy, he was always first to speak, and his judgment was unerring. Nestor and I were the only two who could surpass him, and when it came to fighting on the plain of Troy, he would never remain with the body of his men, but would dash out on far in front, foremost of them in valor. Many a man did he kill in battle. I cannot name every single one of those whom he slew while fighting on the side of the Argives, but will only say how he killed that valiant hero Eurypylus, son of Telephus, who was the handsomest man I ever saw, except Memnon. Many others of the Cittians fell around him by reason of a woman's bribes. Moreover, when all the bravest of the Argives went inside the horse that Epeius had made, and it was left to me to settle when we should either open the door of our ambuscade or close it, though all the other leaders and chief among the Danaans were drying their eyes and quaking in every limb, I never once saw him turn pale nor wipe a tear from his cheek. He was all the time urging me to break out from the horse, grasping the handle of his sword and his bronze-shod spear and breathing fury against the foe. Yet when we had sacked the city of Priam, he got his handsome share of the prize money and went on board, such is a fortune of war, without a wound upon him, neither from a thrown spear nor in close combat, for the rage of Ares is a matter of great chance. When I had told him this, the ghost of Achilles strode off across a meadow full of asphodel, exulting over what I had said concerning the prowess of his son. The ghosts of other dead men stood near me and told me each his own melancholy take, but that of Ajax, son of Telamon, alone held aloof, still angry with me for having won the cause in our dispute about the armor of Achilles. Thetis had offered it as a prize, but the Trojan prisoners and Athena were the judges. Would that I had never gained the day in such a contest, for it cost the life of Ajax, who was foremost of all the Danaans after the son of Peleus, alike in stature and prowess. When I saw him, I tried to pacify him and said, Ajax, will you not forget and forgive even in death? But must the judgment about that hateful armor still rankle with you? It cost us Argives dear enough to lose such a tower of strength as you were to us. We mourned you as much as we mourned Achilles, son of Peleus himself, nor can the blame be laid on anything but on the spite which Zeus bore against the Danaans, for it was this that made him counsel your destruction. Come here, therefore, bring your proud spirit into the subjection, and hear what I can tell you. He would not answer, but turned away to Erebus and to the other ghosts. Nevertheless, I should have made him talk to me in spite of his being so angry, or I should have gone on talking to him, only that there were still others among the dead whom I desired to see. Then I saw Minos, son of Zeus, with his golden scepter in his hand, sitting in judgment of the dead, and the ghosts were gathered sitting and standing round him in the spacious house of Hades to learn his sentences upon them. After, I saw huge Orion in a meadow full of asphodel driving the ghosts of the wild beast that he had killed upon the mountains, and he had a great bronze club in his hand, unbreakable forever and ever. And I saw Tityus, son of Gaia, stretched upon the plain and covering some 9 acres of ground. Two vultures on either side of him were digging their beaks into his liver, and he kept on trying to beat them off with his hands, but could not, for he had violated Zeus's mistress, Leto, as she was going through Panopeus on her way to the oracle. I saw also the dreadful fate of Tantalus, who stood in a lake that reached his chin. He was dying to quench his thirst, but could never reach the water, for whenever the poor creature stooped to drink, it dried up and vanished, so that there was nothing but dry ground, parched by the spite of heaven. There were tall trees, moreover, that shed their fruit over his head, pears, pomegranates, apples, sweet figs, and juicy olives, but whenever the poor creature stretched out his hand to take some, the wind tossed the branches back again to the clouds. And I saw Sisyphus at his endless task, raising his prodigious stone with both his hands. With hands and feet he tried to roll it up to the top of the hill, but always just before he could roll it over onto the other side, its weight would be too much for him, and the pitiless stone would come thundering down again onto the plain. Then he would begin trying to push it uphill again, and the sweat ran off him, and the steam rose after him. After I saw mighty Heracles, but it was his phantom only, for he is feasting over with the immortal gods, and has lovely Hebe to wife, who is daughter of Zeus and Hera. The ghosts were screaming around him like scared birds flying all around. He looked black as night with his bare bow in his hands and his arrow on the string, glaring around as though ever on the point of taking aim. About his breast there was a wondrous golden belt adorned with the most marvelous fashion, with bears, wild boars, and lions with gleaming eyes. There was also war and battle and death. The man who had made that belt, do what he might, would never be able to make another like it. Heracles knew me at once when he saw me and spoke piteously, saying, "My poor Odysseus, noble son of Laertes, are you too leading the same sorry kind of life that I did when I was above ground? I was son of Zeus, but I went through an infinity of suffering, for I became bondsman to one who was far beneath me, a low fellow who set me in all manner of labors. He once sent me here to fetch the hellhound, for he did not think he could find anything harder for me to do than this. But I got the hound out of Hades and brought him to him, for Hermes and Athena helped me." On this, Heracles went down again into the house of Hades, but I stayed where I was, in case some other of the mighty dead should come to me. And I should have seen still other of them that are gone before, whom I would fain have seen, Theseus and Pirithous, glorious children of the gods. But so many thousands of ghosts came round to me and uttered such appalling cries that I was panic-stricken lest Persephone should send up from the house of Hades the head of that awful monster Gorgon. On this I hastened back to my ship and awdered my men to go on board at once and loose the hawser. So they embarked and took their places, whereon the ship went down the stream of the river Oceanus. We had to row at first, but presently a fair wind sprang up.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship, with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive. with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
This is a selection from Virgil's Aeneid, Book 6. A deep cave yawned, dreary and vast, shingle-strewn, sheltered by the black lake and the gloom of the forests. Over it no flying things could wing their way unharmed. Such a vapor streamed from the dark gorge and rose into the overarching sky. Here the priestess first arrays 4 black-bodied bullocks and pours wine upon their forehead, and plucking the topmost hairs from between the horns, lays them on the sacred fire for first offering, calling aloud on Hecate, mistress of heaven and hell. Others lay knives beneath and catch the warm blood in cups. Aeneas himself smites with the sword a black-fleeced she-lamb to the mother of the Eumenides and her mighty sister, and a barren heifer, Proserpine, to you. Then he uprears darkling altars to the Stygian king and lays whole carcasses of bulls upon the flames, pouring fat oil over the blazing entrails. And oh, about the first rays of sunrise, the ground moaned underfoot, and the woodland ridges began to stir, and dogs seemed to howl through the dusk as the goddess came. Apart, keep apart, O you unsanctified, cries the soothsayer, retire from all the groves, and you stride on and unsheath your steel. Now is need of courage, O Aeneas, now of strong resolve. So much she spoke and plunged madly into the cavern's opening. He, with unflinching steps, keeps pace with his advancing guide. Gods who are sovereign over souls, silent ghosts and chaos and phlegethon, the wide dumb realm of night, as I have heard, so let me tell, and according to your will, unfold things sunken deep under earth in gloom. They went darkling through the dusk beneath the solitary night, through the empty dwellings and the bodiless realm of Dis. Even as one walks in the forest beneath the jealous light of a doubtful moon, when Jupiter shrouds the sky in shadow and black night blots out the world, right in front of the doorway and in the entry of the jaws of hell, grief and avenging cares have made their bed. They dwell, wan sicknesses and gloomy eld and fear and ill-counseling hunger and loathly want shapes terrible to see, and death and labor and thereby sleep, death's kinsmen, and the soul's guilty joys and death-dealing war full in the gateway, and the furies in their iron cells and mad discord with blood-stained fillets and wreathing her serpent locks. Midway, an elm, shadowy and high, spreads her boughs and secular arms where, one says, idle dreams dwell, clustering and cling under every leaf. And monstrous creature besides, many and diverse, keep covert at the gates. Centaurs and the two-shaped Scyllas and the hundredfold Briareus and the beast of Lerna hissing horribly and the Chimera armed with flame, Gorgons and Harpies and the body of the Triform Shade. Here Aeneas snatches at his sword in a sudden flutter of terror and turns the naked edge on them as they come. And he did not his wise fellow passenger remind him that these lives flit thin and unessential in the hollow mask of body. He would rush on and vainly lash through phantoms with his steel. Hence a road leads to Tartarus and Acheron's wave. Here the dreary pool swirls thick in muddy eddies and disgorges into Cocytus with its load of sand. Charon, the dread ferryman, guards these flowing streams, ragged and awful, his chin covered with untrimmed masses of hoary hair, and his glassy eyes aflame. His soiled raiment hangs knotted from his shoulders. Himself he plies the pole, trims the sails of his vessel, the steel-blue galley with freight of dead, stricken now in years, but a god's old age is lusty and green. Here, all crowded and rushed, streaming to the bank, matrons and men and high-hearted heroes dead and done with life, boys and unwitted girls and children laid young on the bier before their parents' eyes, multitudinous as leaves fall, dropping in the forest at autumn's earliest frost, or birds swarm landward with the deep gulf, when the chill of the year routs them overseas and drives them to sunny lands. They stood, pleading for the first passage across, and stretched forth passionate hands to the farther shore. But the grim sailor admits now one and now another, while some he pushes back far apart on the strand, moved with marvel at the confused throng. "Say, O maiden," cries Aeneas, "what means this flocking to the river? Of what are the souls so fain? Or what difference makes these retire from the banks? Those go with sweeping oars over the leaden waterways." To him the long-lived priestess thus briefly returned. "Seed of Anchises, most sure progeny of gods, you see the deep pools of Cocytus and the Stygian marsh, by whose divinity the gods fear to swear falsely. All this crowd, you discern, is helpless and unsepulchred. Charon is the ferryman they who ride on the wave found a tomb. Nor is it given to cross the awful banks and horse streams ere the dust has found a resting place. 100 years they wander here, flitting about the shore. Then at last they gain entrance and revisit the pools so sorely desired." Anchises' son stood still and ponderingly stayed his footsteps, pitying at heart their cruel lot. There he discerns mournful and unhonored dead, Leucaspis and Eurontes, captains of the Lycian squadron, whom, as they sailed together from Troy over gusty seas, the south wind overwhelmed and wrapped the waters round ship with men. Oh, there went by Palernus, the steersman, who of late, while he watched the stars on their Libyan passage, had slipped from the stern and fallen amid the waves. To him, when he first knew the melancholy form in that depth of shade, he thus opened speech. "What god, O Palinurus, reft you from us and sank you amid the seas? Come forth and tell. For in this single answer Apollo deceived me, never found false before, when he prophesied you safety on ocean and arrival on the Ausonian coasts. See, in this is his promise-keeping. And he, neither did Phoebus on his oracular seat delude you, O Prince Anchises' son, nor did any god drown me in the sea. For while I clung to my appointed charge and governed our course, I pulled the tiller with me in my fall, and the shock as I slipped wrenched it away. But the rough seas, I swear, fear for myself, never wrung me so sore as for your ship, lest the rudder lost and the pilot struck away, those gathering waves might master it. 3 wintry nights in the water, the blustering south drove me over the endless sea. Scarcely on the 4th dawn, I descried Italy as I rose on the climbing wave. Little by little I swam shoreward. Already I clung safe, but while encumbered with my dripping raiment, I caught with crooked fingers at the jagged needles of a mountain rock. The barbarous people attacked me in arms and ignorantly deemed me a prize. Now the wave holds me and the winds toss me on the shore. By heaven's pleasant light and breezes, I beseech you, by your father, by Eubulus, your rising hope, rescue me from these distresses. Oh, unconquered one, either do you, for you can, cast earth over me and again seek the haven of Velia, or do you, if in any wise if in any wise the goddess who bore you shows a way, for not without divine will do I deem you will float across these vast rivers and the Stygian pool, lend me a pitying hand and bear me over the waves in your company, that at least in death I may find a quiet resting place." Thus he ended, and the soothsayer thus began. "Whence, O Palinurus, this fierce longing of yours? Shall you without burial behold the Stygian waters and the awful river of the Furies? Cease to hope prayers may bend the decrees of heaven, but take my words for your memory, for comfort in your woeful case. Far and wide shall the bordering cities be driven by celestial portents to appease your dust. They shall rear a tomb and pay the tomb a yearly offering, and forevermore shall the place keep Palinurus's name. The words soothed away his distress, and for a while drove grief away from his sorrowing heart. He is glad in the land of his name. So they complete their journey's beginning, and draw nigh the river. Just then the waterman descried them from the Stygian wave advancing through the silent woodland and turning their feet towards the bank, and opens on them in these words of challenge. Whoso you are who marches in arms towards our river forth and say, there as you are, why you come, and stay your advance. This is the land of shadows, of sleep and slumberous night. No living body may the Stygian hull convey, nor truly had I joy of taking Alcides on the lake for passenger, nor Theseus and Pirithous, born of gods, though they were unconquered in might. He lay fettering hand on the warder of Tartarus, and dragged him cowering from the throne of my lord the king. They essayed him to ravish our mistress from the bridal chamber of Dis. There, too, the Amphrysian soothsayer made brief reply. No such plot is here, be not moved, nor do our weapons offer violence. The huge gatekeeper may bark on forever in his cavern and affright the bloodless ghosts. Proserpine may keep her honor within her uncle's gates. Aeneas of Troy, renowned in goodness as in arms, goes down to meet his father in the deep shades of Erebus. If the sight of such affection stirs you in no wise, yet this bow, she discovers the bow hidden in her raiment, you must know, then his heaving breast allays in anger, and he says no more, but marveling at the awful gift, the fated rod so long unseen, he steers in his dusky vessel and draws to shore. Next he routs out the souls that sate on the long benches, and clears the thwarts while he takes mighty Aeneas on board. The galley groaned under the weight in all her seams, and the marsh water leaked fast in. At length, prophetess and prince are landed unscathed on the ugly ooze and livid sedge. This realm rings with the triple-throated baying of vast Cerberus, couched huge in the cavern opposite, to whom the prophetess, seeing the serpents already bristling upon his neck, throws a cake made slumberous with honey and drugged grain. He, with threefold jaws gaping in ravenous hunger, catches it when thrown, and sinks to earth with monstrous body, outstretched and sprawling huge over all his den. The warder, overwhelmed, Aeneas makes entrance and quickly issues from the bank of the irremediable wave. Immediately wailing voices are loud in their ears, the souls of babies crying on the doorway sill, whom, torn from the breast and portionless in life's sweetness, a dark day cut off and drowned in bitter death. Hard by them are those condemned to death on false accusation. Neither indeed are these dwellings assigned without lot and judgment. Minos presides and shakes to the urn. He summons a council of the silent people and inquires of their lives and charges. Next in order have these mourners their place whose own innocent hands dealt them death. Dealt them death who flung away their souls in hatred of the day. How fain were they now in upper air to endure their poverty and sore labor. It may not be the unlovely pool locks them in her gloomy wave, and Styx pours her ninefold barrier between them. And not far from here are shown, stretching on every side, the wailing fields, so they call them by name. Here they whom pitiless love has wasted in cruel decay hide among untrodden ways, shrouded in embosoming and myrtle thickets. Not death itself ends their distresses. In this region he discerns Phaedra and Procris, and woeful Eriphyle, showing on her the wounds of her merciless son, and Evadne and Pasiphae. Laodamia goes in their company, among whom Dido, the Phoenician, fresh from her death wound, wandered in the vast forest. By her the Trojan hero stood, and knew the dim form through the darkness, even as the moon at the month's beginning to him who sees or thinks he sees her rising through the vapors. He let tears fall and spoke to her lovingly and sweet. Alas, Dido, so the news was true that reached me. You did perish, and the sword sealed your doom? Ah, me, was I cause of your death? By the stars I swear, by the heavenly powers, and all that is sacred beneath the earth, unwillingly, O queen, I left your shore. But the gods, at whose orders now I pass through this shadowy place, this land of moldering overgrowth and deep night, the gods command drive me forth. Nor could I deem my departure would bring you pain so great as this. Stay your footstep, and withdraw not from our gaze. From whom do you run? The last speech of your fate ordains me this. In such words and with starting tears, Aeneas soothed the burning and fierce-eyed soul. She turned away, with looks fixed fast on the ground, stirred no more in countenance by the speech he essays than if she stood in iron, flint, or Marpessian stone. At length she started and fled wrathfully in the shadowy woodland, where Sichaeus, her ancient husband, responds to her distresses and equals her affection. Yet Aeneas, dismayed by her cruel doom, follows her far on her way with pitying tears. Thence he pursues his appointed path, and now they trod those utmost fields where the renowned in war have their haunt apart. Here Tydeus meets him, here Parthenopaeus, glorious in arms, and the pallid phantom of Adrastus. Here the Dardanians long wept on earth and fallen in the war, sighing he discerns all their long array. Glaucus and Medon and Thersilochus, the three children of Antenor and Polyphetes, Cares is priest, and Idaeus is yet charioted, yet grasping his arms, the souls throng round him to right and left, nor is one look enough, lingering, delighted, they pace by his side and inquire wherefore he is come. But the princes of the Grecians and Agamemnon's armies, when they see him glittering in arms through the gloom, hurry, terror-stricken away. Some turn backward, as when of old they fled to the ships. Some raise their voice faintly and gasp out a broken, ineffectual cry. And here he saw Deiphobus, son of Priam, with face cruelly torn, face and both hands and ears lopped from his mangled temples, and nostrils maimed by a shameful wound. Barely he knew the cowering form that hid its dreadful punishment. Then he springs to accost it in familiar speech. Deiphobus, mighty in arm, seed of Teucer's royal blood, whose wantonness of vengeance was so cruel, who was allowed to use you thus? Rumor reached me on that last night, outwearied with endless slaughter, you had sunk on the heap of mingled carnage. Then my own hand reared an empty tomb on the Rhaetian shore, my own voice thrice called aloud upon your ghost. Your name and armor keep the spot. You, oh, my friend, I could not see nor lay in the native earth I left. Whereto the son of Priam? In nothing, oh, my friend, were you wanting. You had paid the full to Deiphobus and the dead man's shade. But me, my fate in the Laconian woman's murderous guilt, thus dragged down to doom. These are the records of her leaving. For how we spent that last night in delusive gladness, you know, and must needs remember too well. When the fated horse leapt down on the steep towers of Troy, bearing armed infantry for the burden of its womb, she, in feigned procession, led round our Phrygian women with Bacchic cries. Herself she upreared a mighty flame amid them, and called the Grecians out of the fortress height. Then was I fast in mine ill-fated bridal chamber, deep asleep and outworn with my charge, and lay overwhelmed in slumber sweet and profound, and most like to easeful death. Meanwhile that crown of wives removes all the arms from my dwelling and slips out the faithful sword from beneath my head. She calls Menelaus into the house and flings wide the gateway. Be sure she hoped her lover would magnify the guilt, and so she might quench the fame of her ill deeds of old. Why do I linger? They burst into the chamber, they and the Aeolid, counselor of crime, in their company. gods, recompense the Greeks even thus, if the righteous lips I call for vengeance. But come, tell in truth what has brought you here, still alive. Come, you driven on ocean wanderings, or by prompting from heaven? Or what fortune keeps you from rest, that you should draw nigh these sad, sunless dwellings, this disordered land? In this change of talk, Dawn had already crossed heaven's mid-axle on her rose-charioted way, and happily had they thus drawn out all the allotted time. But the Sibyl made brief warning speech to her companion. Night falls, Aeneas. We waste the hours in weeping. Here is the place where the road disparts. By this that runs to the right under the great Dis city is our path to Elysium. But the leftward wreaks vengeance on the wicked and sends them to unrelenting hell. But Deiphobus, be not angered, mighty priestess, I will depart. I will refill my place and return into darkness. Go, glory of our people, go enjoy a fairer fate than mine. Thus much he spoke, and on the word turned away his footsteps. Aeneas looked swiftly back, and sees beneath the cliff on the left hand a wide city, girt with a triple wall and encircled by a racing river of boiling flame, Tartarian phlegethon that echoes over its rolling rocks. In front is the gate, huge and pillared with solid adamant, that no warring force of men nor the very habitants of heaven may avail to overthrow. It stands up a tower of iron, and Tisiphone, sitting girt in blood-stained pall, keeps sleepless watch at the entry by night and day. Hence moans are heard, and fierce lashes resound with the clank of iron and dragging chains. Aeneas stopped and hung, dismayed at the tumult. What shapes of crimes are here? Declare, O maiden, or what the punishment that pursues them and all this upsurging wail? Then the soothsayer thus began to speak. Illustrious chief of Troy, no pure foot may tread these guilty courts, but to me Hecate herself, when she gave me rule over the groves of Avernus, taught how the gods punish, and guided me through all her realm. Gnosian Rhadamanthus here holds unrelaxing sway, chastises secret crime revealed, and exacts confession, wheresoever in the upper world one vainly exultant in stolen guilt has till the dusk of death kept clear from the evil he wrought. Straightway avenging Tisiphone, girt with her scourge, tramples down the shivering sinners, menaces them with the grim snakes in her left hand, and summons forth her sisters in merciless train. Then at last the sacred gates are flung open and grate on the jarring hinge. Mark you what sentry is seated in the doorway, what shape guards the threshold. More grim within sits the monstrous Hydra, with her 50 black yawning throats, and Tartarus's self gapes sheer and strikes into the gloom through twice the space that one looks upward to Olympus and to the sky heaven. Here, Earth's ancient children, the Titans' brood, hurled down by the thunderbolt, lie wallowing in the abyss. Here likewise I saw the twin Aloids, enormous of frame, who essayed with violent hands to pluck down high heaven and thrust Jove from his upper realm. Likewise I saw Salmoneus in the cruel payment he gives for mocking Jove's flame and Olympus's thunders. Borne by four horses and brandishing a torch, he rode in triumph midway through the populous city of Grecian Elis, and claimed for himself the worship of a deity. Madman, who would mimic the storm cloud and the inimitable bolt with brass that rang under his trampling horse hooves? But the Lord Omnipotent hurled his shaft through the thickening clouds, no firebrand his nor smoky glare of torches, and dashed him headlong in the fury of the whirlwind. Therewithal Titius might be seen, fosterling of the earth, mother of all, whose body stretches over 9 full acres, and a monstrous vulture with crooked beak eats away with the imperishable liver and the entrails that breed in suffering, and plunges deep into the breast that gives it food and dwelling. Nor is any rest given to the fibers that ever grow anew. Why tell of the Lapithai of Ixion and Pirithous, over whom a stone hangs, just slipping and just as though it fell, or the high banqueting couches gleam golden pillared, And the feast is spread in royal luxury before their faces, couched hard by the eldest of the Furies, wards the tables from their touch, and rises with torch upreared and thunderous lips. Here are they who hated their brethren while life endured, or struck a parent, or entangled a client in wrong, or who brooded alone over found treasure and shared it not with their fellows. This is the greatest multitude of all, and they who were slain for adultery, and who followed up righteous arms, and feared not to betray their master's plighted hand. Imprisoned, they await their doom, seek not to be told that doom, that fashion of fortune, wherein they are sunk. Some roll a vast stone, or hang outstretched on the spokes of wheels. Hapless Theseus sits and shall sit forever, and Phlegelus, in his misery, gives counsel to all, and witnesses aloud through the gloom. Learn by this warning to do justly, and not to slight the gods. This man sold his country for gold and laid her under a tyrant's sway. He set up and pulled down laws at a price. This other forced his daughter's bridal chamber in a forbidden marriage, all dared some monstrous wickedness, and had success in what they dared. Not had I 100 tongues, 100 mouths, and a voice of iron, could I sum up all the shapes of crime or name over all their punishments. Thus spoke Phoebus's long-lived priestess. Then, but come now, she cries, haste on the way and perfect the service begun. Let us go faster. I see the ramparts cast in cyclopean furnaces, and in the front the arched gateway, where they bid us lay the gifts foreordained. She ended, and advancing side by side along the shadowy ways, they pass over and draw nigh the gates. Aeneas makes entrance, and sprinkling his body with fresh water, plants the bough full in the gateway. Thank you all for listening. I'm going to keep this brief because the more I talk, the less I want to talk. But I really appreciate all of you listening to this reading episode, and I hope you're enjoying all of the bonus re-airing spooky season pieces that I'm doing, which frankly I forgot about and just got a notification today and was like, oh right! I put out all these bonus episodes because I am obsessed with spooky. So I hope you're enjoying all of that. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is written and produced by me, Liv Albert. Michaela Smith is the Hermes to my Olympians, perhaps more colloquially known as the assistant producer. The podcast is hosted and monetized by iHeartMedia. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Help me continue bringing you the world of Greek mythology and the ancient Mediterranean by becoming a patron, where you will get bonus episodes and more. Visit patreon.com/mythsbaby or click the link in this episode's description. You are all so wonderful, especially during this of spookiest of seasons. I am Liv, and I love this shit.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.